Right. Today I'm talking to the legend that is Snowy Shaw. So hi, Snowy. Welcome to our celebration week on Metal Shock Finland for the 40th anniversary of the classic Rainbow Rising album. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Yeah, actually, yeah. It's a sunny day in Gothenburg. Usually it's raining all the time, but today it's sunny, so yeah, it's good.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay. So, is the Rainbow Rising album great or not?
Actually, I never heard it. No. Now, I should say that, I mean, it's an album that I consider it a masterpiece and a pretty much a milestone I should say it's the quintessential album that introduced a more Dungeons and Dragons type fantasy heavy rock to the masses, and also so might even also be like a proto power metal, if you like, and so I think it has meant a lot for the music evolution. Yeah, it's a perfect album, I think. Yeah,
indeed.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, perfect hybrid from everything from the sound to the artwork to the performance to the songs and everything. And I think it was revolutionary in its day. And I can't think of any album that sort of made that kind of renaissance Dungeons and Dragons, once again, the imagery that Dio introduced to it. Hold on, I have to turn this off. So I think it really made a splash in the metal world, or back then the heavy rock world, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so can you tell us about your favorite tracks and what they mean to you?
Obviously we have Stargazer, that's pretty much everyone's favorite, but I also love Tarot Woman and Round with the Wolf, and basically the whole album, with maybe one little exception, where they sort of got off the track a little bit and tried to please that radio-friendly audience with Do You Close Your Eyes? I mean, maybe it's to create the dynamics in an album, but to me it seemed like, why?
Yeah.
Stick to the wizardry and the magnificence instead of trying to make a radio friendly song. But you can also see that Richie later on with Graham Bonnet's involvement and all that, and try to please the more US radio friendly audience, I suppose. So maybe.
Yeah. I guess that could have been some record company pressure, maybe.
Yeah, of course, you gotta have a hit song, don't sing about wizards and rainbows so much. Sing about love. Everybody can relate to that. So.
Yeah.
Those terms, I guess, you know, everybody have to, you know, play along with it somehow, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So, what are your thoughts about Richie Blackmore's musicianship and guitar playing?
I think he's a wizard in a way. Mm. Now we're talking a lot about wizards and shit, but yeah. But I think he is a genius in a way, and maybe not so much as a solo guitarist as most people want to sort of put on him, because I think he, as a riff master, as a musician who dared to step out of not the comfort zone maybe, but also in sort of interact and bring in a lot of other elements from different kinds of music, and also play very simplistic and stuff, which is very striking. And also back with Deep Purple, of course. I don't know how they work together, but I get the feeling that he was sort of part of the leader there, leadership. Mm-hmm. So, and we're steering the whole vehicle, I suppose. And obviously with Rainbow he was, but also the dynamics and the with Dio and him being the main composers, it was a perfect marriage, I should say. And I think the kind of music, like if you take even back to Purple and Child in Time and all that, I mean, it's very simplistic and And therefore so much more striking. I mean, everybody can play Smoke on the Water, those kind of easy riffs. I mean, that is what's so striking. Same with Black Sabbath and all that. I mean, you might be the best technical guitar player, but play the more Neanderthal, simple stuff, and that is what's striking, and that people are going to relate to and remember and all that. So, yeah, but I think he's a genius in that aspect, I guess, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so three members of this lineup are no longer with us, of course. Ronnie James Dio, Cozy Powell, and more recently, Jimmy Bain. Would you like to share your thoughts about them, especially Cozy?
When Jimmy Bain passed away like a month or two ago, I said, okay, that explains now when they got back together, when Richie put Rainbow back together. I wrote because I'm friends with Tony Carey on Facebook and all. And I said, that makes me worried about his physical status and all that. But because he's still alive and he wasn't involved in that. All of the rest of the members are gone. So,
yeah.
You know, but he said, don't you worry about that. I feel fine. Okay, good enough to know. But but it's sad. I mean, I guess this is just the beginning. We're going to see that so much more that everybody's just passing now because they are like 20, 25 years older than me. And the things that I grew up with, I mean, all those heroes, they were legendary and pioneers for their time creating heavy music. I mean, they are in their 70s now, so we don't see much more of that. And but of course, Cozy left us a long time ago, like in '98, I think, right?
Yeah, it was.
But he, what can I say about him? I mean, that haven't already been said. To me, he sort of represented sort of an extension of John Bonham. I guess they were friends and both from Birmingham or something like that, and they are this kind of powerhouse drummer who have a nice groove and a big sound, and I think especially on Rainbow Rising and also on stage, I mean, that is what really sort of reinforced his status and reputation as a bombastic powerhouse drummer, and I really love his style there and the sound and all that. After that I can't really see that he has done anything that impresses me, at least with Whitesnake or whatever it is, you know, and with Mike Schenker and stuff, you know. Yeah, but I mean, he was a fantastic drummer, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So did you see Rainbow live during those iconic years at all?
No, I didn't. I think I didn't see them until 82 or something like that. And then it was Jolyn Turner and I don't know who else, Bobby Rondinelli on drums, I guess, or I don't remember it. Yeah, but... Or some other guy, Paul Gruber or whatever. No, that's not, I don't know. No, but unfortunately I was too young for that. During that period. And as far as I'm concerned, Rainbow to me, I mean, you can have, Jolyn Turner doing I Surrender. It's a fantastic pop song and a catchy song. You cannot simply deny that. But to me, Rainbow represents this sort of renaissance, night-like fantasy-based music, and that is what represents the Rainbow to me. So I could never understand how Richie could get rid of Dio and move on to become more Americanized radio friendly. I mean, I can never understand that. But you could see the sort of tendencies of trying to move in that direction on Long River, Live Rock and Roll, I guess, you know.
Yes, went through a big change.
But I mean, Rainbow is the Rainbow Rising. I mean, is the essence of magnificence to me. I mean, everything is connected from, like I was saying, the sound production, the performance, the songs, the album cover that really captures the whole vibe and atmosphere of the music, and that is just the way I want it, and I still use that as some sort of model when I make music nowadays. Funnily enough, Kiss Destroyer came out the same year. It also has artwork with Ken Kelly, And right. I guess they introduced this kind of oil painting, Conan-based, you know, fantasy thing in there. And both those albums been, I mean, I cannot express enough how important those two albums been to me as a musician and songwriter and also, yeah. It's kind of funny, I think, that both came out 40 years ago and I still use that as a sort of a role model or what do you say, like a magic formula or something like that.
Oh, that's brilliant though, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, that just shows.
I think the artwork should capture the vibe of the music and all that, and that's really what we want. So,
Yeah. So moving on to that, you mentioned Ken Kelly was the creator. So as you're also a photographer and designer as well yourself, what is your opinion about the artwork? I know you've just touched on it a little bit on Rising.
Yeah, I guess I just did. But I think to me, the thing is that I cannot really separate the music from the artwork. I mean, to me, it's like a perfect marriage and like yin yang or something. Yeah. And it sticks together and it has to be that way. And that is always what I strive for, to make it everything go hand in hand, like a perfect hybrid there. And that is sort of essentially the thing that I'm struggling or striving for. And I think it's so fantastic that those kind of artworks, I mean, it's so symbolic, like a big hand coming out of the ocean capturing a rainbow. It's just fantastic. And to me, who grew up being a diehard fan of superhero Marvel comics and horror comics and shit like Tales from the Crypt and The Werewolf at Night or whatever, all that kind of thing. So it really tapped on to me because it's so childlike, I guess, you know. I mean, if you like Conan and superheroes and stuff.
Yeah.
That really taps into you, and that's also why I got into Kiss as much as I did,
Oh, fantastic.
And not so much at status quo, I mean, because they look like ordinary guys in jeans and you know.
Yeah, bit of a difference, yeah.
Yeah, but you mentioned photography. I mean, I think everything is perfect, just like there are five members and the way they placed like those totally square photos on Rainbow Rising. And I mean, I even made my jeans with stars like Ronnie James Dio had.
Really?
So, I mean, obviously, it made a huge impression on me.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So, moving on to this year, to 2016, what do you think about Rich's return to rock after all these years?
But I think what he's been doing with this Blackmore's Night, or whatever it's called, going full blown into the Renaissance music with those funny hats and green sleeves and la la la, whatever. I think he's always been touching that and make some sort of rock and roll based on that, which sort of created the sort of magic. And now he will, in his older age, I mean, go ahead and it's your life. Do whatever you want to. And, you know, now he has returned. Maybe he wants more louder guitars and more rock and roll, I guess. And that's cool. And I heard a singer, some Italian guy, I guess, and it sounded very good.
He's Chilean. It's Ronnie Romero. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, it sounded excellent. Apart from, I don't know who's in. I think Jens Johansson, isn't he playing the keyboard?
Yes, okay. Yes, he is.
Yeah, but to me, I would like to see that. But all these, bands getting back together, doing the farewell tours and all that, I mean, it just pretty much to me spells out that we come to the end of an era, pretty much. Mm. When I'm trying to book festivals for my own band and my own solo and stuff here, they say, okay, everybody's just interested in the Black Sabbath farewell tour and Rainbow, the reunited Rainbow. So it makes it harder for younger bands. But of course, I mean, everything is based on nostalgia these days, you know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's only doing three shows, so I think it's just a bit of a, you know, he wants to get back to it for a bit.
Yeah, but that's perfectly cool. I would love to see that.
Yeah. Okay, so can you tell me what's happening in your world at the moment? We know you've got some shows coming up this year and you've been busy recording.
I guess you could say I'm something of a overachiever type of guy who always put too much on my table that I can barely sort it out. But yeah, but I'm currently in the studio and preparing everything for video shoots and all that and for the upcoming show. So we're going to start out playing a festival in Norway, and then we go to play a couple of them in Sweden and then Germany and stuff. So yeah, but there's a lot of things going on, but not so many shows actually, because I mean, I want to put the main focus on recording the music that I've been waiting for to do and get the time or put the time off to do that actually. And I've been working on that for years and years, but now it's a very interesting phase, I should say, because I'm experimenting in the studio using actually Rainbow Rising as a reference. Because
really?
Because, and also Kiss Destroy, like I mentioned, because I mean, I'm in all kinds of different kinds of music. And nowadays, this is the industry standard. It has to sound like this. Now, fuck that. I want the ambient sound from the room, and then you can add some more bass drums or something, you know, to have the, I don't want the closeness or it has to be this tight. I want a big room like Rainbow Rising, for example. That is what I think. And they say, yeah, but it's very unconventional these days to do it like that. As if I give a fuck, I say. I don't give a shit. I mean, so the way I consider making my own music nowadays is like how people tend to look at their, you know, like masturbation. I'm doing it for my sake, you know.
Yeah.
If other people like that as well, wow, that's a bonus. But I'm doing it to please myself first and foremost. Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
And if they say, yeah, but you cannot have those kind of references that are 40 years old, says who? I mean, if you take a band like Wolf Mother, for example, if you would put on like a Andy Sneap, nothing against him though, but that kind of production that's modern and it's really in your face, it wouldn't work because they sound like they were picked out of 1969. I mean, so that's so part of their sound. It has to sound like that. And same thing with, if I write music based on my influences, that might be 30 years old or whatever. Or, who says that I cannot apply that kind of sound and production to it? I mean, but I gotta please the audience. No, I gotta please myself.
That sounds great. Yeah, good for you. So when can we expect any new material then?
I mean, in this day and age, everything is so upside down. I mean, there is no industry. So if they talk about, okay, this is industry standard, and I say, but okay, sorry, but there is no industry. So, but I'm just going to do things my own way. I have sort of like a rough plan that I allow myself to, you know, since I've been with so many different bands over the years, and it's not, okay, which is your favorite band of all the bands you've been involved with? I should say, I mean, I cannot rule out any of them. It's like kids, you know, like having you cannot have favorize a specific kid. Everything's been good. And I always also had a sort of expression in any kind, whether it's like Dimmu Borgir or King Diamond or Dream Evil or whatever it might be, Notre Dame or, and stuff. So I decided to do just whatever I want. And it's going to be pretty ambivalent or scattered for the audience, I suppose. But so yeah, anyway, long story short, I mean, I'm gonna put out sporadic stuff every now and then. Like I'm gonna put out like a video in a couple of weeks with one song. It should be like an appetizer for what's to come. And then also gonna do, now on Saturday we're gonna shoot another video. And that is a whole different kind of thing. So I'm going to just put it out there every 3 months or something and see what happens, really, you know.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Because, I mean, the concept of putting out albums and stuff, I don't know. I think it's actually back to the 60s where they did like a, let's say they did a greatest hits, you know. It was a collection of a lot of singles, and they added two extra numbers to have some bonus for the people who would buy the LP. And I think it's back to that now, because people don't have time for or patience to listen to any fillers. They don't listen to an album start to finish any longer. So, so it's only the highlights, and you know. So I'm gonna put a lot of emphasis on creating those specific songs and mix every song separately, okay, and make it its own universe. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, I really like the whole atmosphere, like Rainbow Rising, if we're going to go back to that, where they created their own universe, Sonic universe, and everything is connected, like a light into black, like all those Stargazer. It's a perfect thing there. I mean, it's like inviting you to their special little world, fantasy world. And that's pretty much what I have as a model or formula, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I'm talking a lot of strange things here.
No, that's great. That's great. Sounds like a great way to be, a great way to work. Yeah. And you obviously really enjoy what you do.
Strange times. I mean, a lot of that is also why I run my own record company, my own web shop, and my own production company. I'm pretty much in charge of everything myself, you know, so.
Yeah.
Because I cannot see that I'm going to sort of please some conservative metal label to do things in a certain way to please an audience that is like sort of vanishing or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it for my own sake, actually.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Okay, so as a vocalist and multi-instrumentalist, do you have an absolute favorite instrument to play, and what's the best part about what you do in general?
I should say that the best part is connected to the main reason that I started out teaching myself to play all those instruments and sing and all. Because that means that I won't be depending on any other musicians to create the kind of music that I want to do. And that's basically all there is to it. So now I can, everything that I have, like what I envision and the kind of thing that I want to bring across, I can play all those instruments and create it the way I want to. To verbally try to explain to someone, I think that's the hardest part. I mean, I tend to think in images and colors and stuff. So,
yeah.
So it's very, very hard to explain to someone else. Usually, although I might not be credited as a guitar player or bass player on albums and stuff when I was playing drums. But if I wrote the songs, I usually played all the instruments to get it the way I want to. And because I figured it takes less time if we do it like that. And since I'm capable of doing it, we get it to a perfection the way I want it. And then they have a lot of time to learn once it's finished. The rest of the members have time to learn to play their part when we're going out to play live, you know?
Yeah.
So because I think otherwise it's such a compromise and I don't know what to say really, but I mean, so I really like to play all the instruments myself to create that kind of thing. I heard an interview with Yngwie Malmsteen, and he has this reputation of being a Gestapo kind of type of figure or very, very dominant. But he said, it's like an artist painting a big painting. It's not like, okay, and then you invite other people. Okay, I want a little car down here in the corner. And, you know, it doesn't really work like that, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
People have to have some sort of get the impression that a band is a bunch of good guys who are good friends getting together in a rehearsal room, having a couple of beers, and then just jamming, and something magical comes out of it. Maybe it worked for, I don't know, Deep Purple or so on, but it's going to be someone who's in charge of writing the material and going in a certain direction, I guess, you know. Otherwise, it tends to get too scattered. I mean, you can see that with Alice Cooper. They were like this hippie community or whatever until Bob Ezrin stepped in and took charge of the situation. And, okay, we got to have some sort of direction. And that is usually what I do. So.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Okay, so to finish off, would you like to leave a message for your fans and the listeners?
What can I say? It's my web shop. And make me able to continue with my passion and hobby, you know, so I can come play to you, and you can come visit my shows and get blown away by a fantastic show that I put my heart and soul and hard-earned money into, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for your time, Snowy.
But, you know, I'm honest at least, right?
You are. No, that's been great. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you.